Welcome to Cannon Crew, a weekly podcast discussing the Charleston Battery. Your host, Granite, will be joined by other defenders of the fleet from the black and yellow supporters section, and together they will help fortify and conquer. They are the Cannon Crew.
Welcome to the Cannon Crew. I'm joined by Ryan. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going? Glad to be here.
Good. I'm glad you're here, too. I'm also joined by Patrick. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm well.
This is our very first podcast, and we're here to talk about our local club, the Charleston Battery. Saturday night was our first match of the 2024 USL Championship season. We kicked off against North Carolina FC away at Cary. North Carolina recently promoted to the USL Championship and went up there, and let's talk about the starting 11. Ryan, what do you think about the call by Coach Pierman on the people he started? He started Markanik, Rodriguez, Ikaza, Lakava, Malloy, Allen, and our back four, Drack, Smith, Archer, and Siegbers. And of course, Grenways is our keeper. What do you think of that selection, Ryan?
Honestly, I thought it was a pretty sound selection going into it. The only one that really caught my eye and stood out to me was Nick Markanik playing solely up top as our sole striker, whereas last year he was on the outside. He had the speed, he had the pace of play to go down the field and stretch that width. It was going to be different seeing him now playing the more central role, and it was definitely interesting watching throughout the whole game.
It definitely was. So we started out as a 4-2-3-1 and kind of stuck with that throughout the whole match. And maybe that's the reason why last season they were putting two up top instead of just him by himself. So he played the whole match. He looked pretty strong the whole match. He wasn't getting into these dangerous areas like we were hoping that he could do and provide that our wingers and everybody else trying to give him that support up there.
Now, I'm curious. You said he started out wide, so three up top and then a solo striker, but he moved into the solo striker spot. It was listed Lakava was starting as the striker in that.
No, so last season, Nick Markanik was out wide with Augie up front, right? So then going into this season, they solely put Nick Markanik up front. Was it switched on the pre-match roster? Was Jake supposed to be up top and Nick supposed to be out wide, and then they switched it?
Do you think it was tactical that it was listed?
I don't know. That's a good take. I didn't catch that.
Because it's listed as Lakava up top, and everyone's expecting him, and clearly that was not the case. It had to be a tactical reason, right? Is it a coach already playing tricks on teams for going maybe first match of the season?
Yeah, maybe he's you know, producing one thing and saying, hey, we're going to switch it up and try to give North Carolina a little fun to deal with.
It is a rivalry match, so there is no love for this team.
I hope there's no love for any team out there, but yeah, especially this one, because this is the Southern Derby or something like that, where the most points out of these two teams or a couple teams win the Southern Derby, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, I assume it's that.
So when you look across the board, just generally before we get into the first and second half, I think what resonated with me was, even though we did not get any goals, we had possession. And we had a lot of possession all the way through the first half, through the second half. That was our theme, constant possession on the ball. And we're looking at, in the first half, I think it was like 71%. And overall, at the end of the match, we had possession 66% of the time. One of the other numbers that jumped out at me was the thuggery. Yes, I'll go there. The thuggery of North Carolina, 17 fouls to our 8. And then we get one little, looks like a kind of a rough tackle. We'll get into it because I think Ryan might have something to say about a yellow card that was issued that probably shouldn't have been.
Ryan, what do you think about that yellow card? It's controversial, right?
Yeah, so from the way I watched the referee build it up, the referee let the game play out for the first 10 minutes and he let the game go and he let it be very physical, where it was mainly North Carolina being the ones being very physical because they're the ones ball chasing the entire time. First opening 10 minutes, Charleston Battery bouncing the ball around. And it was great. It was fantastic. We just couldn't link up that final third pass. So we were able to sit in. North Carolina packed in against us. And when they were being aggressive, Jake went for the ball. You watch the replay. Jake never, I don't think he touched him. He still didn't touch him. The guy falls on the ground. The referee comes immediately over and gives the yellow card. It was really Charleston's first aggressive tackle of the night, per se. And to instantly get the yellow card on that issue, it was the first yellow card of the game, too, in that fact, was definitely unwarranted. And it definitely changed how Charleston played, too.
When you look at the replay, and you don't have to slow it down much, but you see where the North Carolina player, he was passing the ball. He was already going down, and we just bumped into him. It was definitely not a yellow cardable offense. It might have been a foul. I don't think the referee, he was in a position a little bit in front of the play, and he was looking back, so he could, I guess he was right there, but it definitely wasn't a yellow card offense.
I feel like he has a long career ahead of him in England for Liverpool, if he ever wants to pursue that.
One thing, let's back up. So one of the best tackles of the match was by our own Leland Archer, one of the few breakaways that North Carolina got, about the 12th minute, and Leland comes in and just beast this guy off the ball and just comes in this big sliding tackle. The announcers, who I will talk about and rail on later, were going on about how he come in two-footed and then backed off, so both feet didn't make any contact. But there was a little more, the fantastic tackle. I think it set the game, set the precedence on that side that don't mess with Leland.
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic to see. And that's what you want to see as a goalkeeper. You want to see your captain, your center back making those types of plays. And for me watching at home, I wanted to run through a wall. I was ready to go. I wanted to be on that field ready with them.
Yeah, he got a foot on a ball. It's obviously that, if anything, he North Carolina player took a dive. It looked like he took a swipe at Leland. Later on, Leland had a little hamstring trouble in the second half. It looks like, I don't know if he did. It looks like he was grabbing his hamstring, come off, and then he was subbed in by, I think, Palma come in, who's been with the team for a year or so. And he did a fantastic job back there just shutting him down for the rest of the match.
Yeah, I want to touch on, there was one big opportunity in the first half that was, I guess you can say, the only opportunity of the game. And what is it? Number 7. He played this outside of his foot ball through 2 or 3 defenders through. And it's one of those plays that sticks with you because it goes through and everyone wants to make that play. Bends around into the 18-yard box onto our player's foot and it just fruition to nothing. Is that, I think, looking at the game, is that at least something we can be positive about, that we have this player sitting there playing these balls we're not expecting, but when you see it, it's one of those breathtaking, glad he's on our side playing that ball in. And at least we have this one chance to create something.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. We have to remember that there's only a couple of players out there that start 11 that were in the battery last year and under Coach Pierman. And so these are a lot of new players that are to the team, and they're all learning each other's habits and everything else. And so it's going to take a couple of matches. So when you make those fantastic plays, everyone knows what's about ready to happen, or at least the battery players know what's about ready to happen, so they can adjust and make the best out of it. Ryan?
So yeah, with that being said, you have a 90% roster turnover. And when you have that type of coming into play, everyone's going to take time to build the connection with the players and everything and build that chemistry. And the only thing we were missing last night, the only thing we were missing was that final ball in the final third of the field for the shot. We couldn't get the shot off with power. And honestly, in that sense, when Jake played that through ball to Nick, all Nick did was run out of space, because all he did was he ended up shooting outside of his foot right at the goalie. He couldn't get enough power on it for the keeper to rebound the shot so we could get a rebound shot and goal. Just couldn't get enough power off that because we were just out of space. So now we have to really create the field and really work the field to how we want to shape it going forward and how we can put the ball in the back of the net, because it's so promising. 70% possession, and so frustrating to see not a ball go in the back of the net. So I don't ever remember having a team have that much possession that I've rooted for. So it's definitely different being on this side of things. Whereas like I've been on the side where my team's had 10% possession, yet we won 2-1 off some miracle. I've always been on that side. That's been amazing. But I've never been on the opposite side of it. So it's a little frustrating.
And it's not like they were like falling in to just stop the game completely. It was just the lack of final third stuff. So it's not chances were there. The creativity's there, but also it's first game, right? So there's a lot of positives to take.
And it's a big rivalry. And it also shows you, too, the level of competition that North Carolina FC went through last year because they won the USL League One. But not only did they do that, we competed in the USL Championship Final. So we were runners up. Both teams also had an 80% plus roster turnover. So North Carolina also lost the majority of their players as well. So it was both brand new teams playing in this derby again that got revived. Tensions were definitely high. Once one goal was going to go in, and I think the floodgates would have opened, I think it could have been like a 4 or 5 goal game if one would have hit the back of the net in the opening 10.
And no one's going to be mad about 70% possession.
Yeah.
You can't look at it as a fan and say, we didn't at least have the ball.
It gets better than that. So if you watch North Carolina throughout the whole match, they started out with 3 at the back, but every time we pressed up, there was 5, 6, 7 players in the box every time. And if you look at the numbers, our passing accuracy in the opponent's half was like 71% and theirs was 55%. So that's pretty impressive. We're getting there, but you're right. We're not unlocking that, picking that lock and trying to get it in or getting it in there so where we can be a little more dangerous. And that's going to take our person we're going to talk about a little more later, Aaron Malloy. He led the whole group of us going down. When we look at the number of passes that the battery had compared to North Carolina, it was obviously we were just not only just possession, but we're control of the game. It wasn't just like we were just trying to sit on the ball. We had 591 passes to their 286. And so that I think that says a lot about the way that we're going to probably play the rest of the season and rely on some key people to be able to execute those passes.
So, Brad, do you think we're lacking anything in the final third? Or do you think it's just more chances we'll create it and we'll get in a rhythm?
Yeah, I think you and I might follow another team that kind of had this problem a couple of years ago. And I'm not saying it's a problem for the battery because this is their first match. It's when the getting down there and unlocking that lock at that final third and that attacking third, especially when they're putting 6, 7 people in a box. And you've got to just stay disciplined and just keep trying to go through it and pick through it. People, the fast players might not necessarily be your best advantage there. You might need somebody that can really, you know, is really technical on the ball and can do some crazy stuff in front of the goal and get around people. That last 18 yards is what's killing it.
And I think that's what makes the world-class strikers, right? You've punished the team the one chance you get. And I just don't think we're not informed yet. It's the first game. So what, 3, 4 games in, 5 games in? I think we'll see those clinical finishes because the team gels a lot better. You're taking a whole new skeleton squad, essentially, and being like, hey, these are your new mates. This is your team. Gel. It's going to take a couple weeks. And I feel like just seeing from the midfield the opportunities that came arise, that's all you can ask for as a fan, that the opportunity's there to score. The goals will go in. The defense was there. The defense held it the entire game. There was, 10, 15 block shots. Goalie didn't have to do much work. I played defense my whole life. It's nice to see that the goalie sat back and had a little breather in my eyes.
I don't know, Ryan. What do you think about those goalies having a little breather?
Even when they did have the breather, you can definitely see they're moving across the goal. They're working. They're on their feet, and they are still diving at the ball, too, because there's a lot of times where the ball was blocked, and they're on the ground diving for it, and now the ball's up in the air, and the keeper's on the ground. So it creates another sense of urgency and unexpected result to happen, because anything can happen. The ball could just fall right on my shoulder, and it just knock right in the goal, and that's such a crap way to get scored on. So it creates a little sense of urgency and panic in people. So we had that a few times. I remember one time in the second half, there was one of those off a corner kick. But my main thing off Adam in the goal for the battery was Chris Allen got fouled at the top of the box. And even though he got fouled on top of the box and the ball got called back and it was a free kick for us, as soon as the ball was shot, Adam made a fantastic save. And even though it didn't count, North Carolina never got the satisfaction of the ball hitting the back of the net. Even denying them that little satisfaction and not them visualizing the ball going the back of the net, not knowing how that felt, really stumped them going forward. So, yeah.
Yeah, looking back at some of the highlights and everything, really, it felt like North Carolina was just swiping at the ball for their chances. They weren't really like confident in what they were doing. It was just, the ball's there, I got to hit it. And you can see it. The goalkeeper's not laying out because he knows it's not even going to be on target. Like, the confidence that our team just has in that moment, it's awesome to see that, like, the other team is just praying and hoping for some garbage to come from whatever they're doing.
Exactly. And I actually want to give some props to North Carolina last night, though, because their coach came into this league, and you can think of it like Atletico Madrid, Diego Simeone. He has taken Atletico Madrid, and they're a very systematic team. It's a system, right? North Carolina FC came in. They don't really have a game plan. They have made it a very systematic team right now. And I'm looking at how they played and realizing that they played a 3-4-3 with their two wingers dropping back, making a 4-4-1. So when they sat in on Charleston, when they were sitting back in on us, they were playing a 4-4-1. And as soon as they would go on the counter, they would immediately then throw four people up front and go back to the 3-4-3 trying to trap us in. That never worked, but they worked so well as a system that they were able to keep the draw. And that's how Atletico Madrid plays. They aren't very good on the attack, but they're very good defensively, and they're going to keep you in games. And it's going to be exciting to see North Carolina going forward, see how they do in the East this year.
I think it was a great test for us. This is your first game out, and you're playing a more known defensive team that just wants to grind through the points. And you're bringing all new players in who have the potential to be some of the, I predict two or three of these players are going to be double digits just in assists for the way the ball is being played around. I'm excited to see just anyone break out in that midfield to start hitting the ball in the back of the net, because the play is there. But again, it's the toughest opponent to start with. By basically being like, we just don't want you near our goal. We're just going to sit everyone back. Like you said, like the Atletico. It's very tough to break that down.
Yeah. When you're looking at Aaron, he had 98 passes in this. I think he was the game leader on that. But he didn't have any shots on goal. Or he didn't have any shots at all. And so somebody like him is going to have to, I'll say, step it up, because he was the beast and he was the engine last night that kept us going and kept the pressure on. But it sure would be nice to have some shots coming from midfield, because it breaks it up. The defense on the other side has to all of a sudden now not just be worried about our front people, but also the people behind them. And I think that will come with time.
Now, Brad, I did think you mentioned the injury. It's the injury, right? It's our guy, Archer. Can you touch on that a little bit? I'm curious. Like, he's our bloodline.
Yeah, that's our captain, and he's been around for a while. I went to CFC, you know, go Cougars. He's been playing here in Charleston, and it was about 58 minutes. He went down, and he was grabbing the bottom part of his leg, what looked like a hamstring. I haven't seen any reports or anything coming out talking about any hamstring injury. First game, and you're already straining your hamstring. It sometimes can be a bear to recover from.
If you look back to the 15th or 18th minute when he made that incredible save and he got kicked afterwards because the attacker followed through very late once the ball was even cleared out, he hits that same spot that Leland grabs. So it makes me think he just aggravated it as the game prolonged. So hopefully maybe a week or two if he misses any time, hopefully not much. I'd like to see him back for the home opener. He misses Oakland game. I'm okay with that. At least have him back home side for the home opener against New Mexico.
Yeah, a good thing is the little depth we have in our center back. So Palma coming on. Palma is just, he's a beast too.
But that shows great depth too, because Graham Smith, that was a great signing we had. I thought he did very well at center back. And then being able to bring Palm on, he started the majority of our games last year at center back. And being able to bring him on as a substitute, oh my goodness.
So let's talk about Graham real quick. Just looking at his numbers.
Yeah.
89 passes, passing accuracy at 86%. Passing accuracy in the opponent's half, 73%. That's one of the center backs and leading with those numbers. That's pretty confident on the ball.
That's the Saliba numbers right there.
Yeah, it sure is. He's keeping up with the numbers of Aaron Molloy there, and that's very promising, especially when we're distributing out of the back. And I know a lot of those passes might have been, you know, moving back to the keeper, back to one side or the other. But I think that still shows a confidence on the ball that we need to have when we're trying to press the other teams and move the ball up the pitch.
Yeah, I have one negative thing from viewing this. I don't know if you guys saw it, but I felt like there was a few times when opportunities arose in the attacking third that we just held the ball or had someone dribble way too much by taking 15 touches instead of three. What do you guys think? Because I like, just as a player, we all seen this. And yes, you want the ball at your best player's feet. You want them to create. But if a player's taking a little too much time with the ball, does that just break down your spacing, your opportunities to even have something from that?
Yeah, I think the key is passing triangles, is quick passes. You see it in the bigger teams that are much better. That speed of play is what tears down the opposition team. And we're just not quite there yet. But maybe we'll get there here soon. It looked promising the way we're passing the ball. We're wanting to do it. It's just executing it a little bit quicker. I think it'll help out immensely.
Yeah, quickness is definitely going to be what we're going to be striving for. But end of the day, when the other team's packing in eight guys and they're 18, it's going to be hard to create some space to have an open shot.
True. Yeah, we can nitpick all day. The bare bones are there.
Yeah.
And it's a very exciting team to watch because they are trying to create and not just sit back and just dump it back and pass around the back line, which is awesome. At least that's there.
So we had a couple subs come on, had Torres come in. He just recently got to the battery. Palma, of course, come on for Archer, and Gutierrez come on for Ikaza, and DeSantos and Conway. Any thoughts on those subs coming in?
Torres is the guy everyone wants to see. He's the big one that's been promoted. There's not much background on the guy. As decorated as someone can be at a youth level, it's still, you don't know. This is his proving ground, and you want to see him come in. We saw him in preseason, hit a banger of a free kick. He plays well with the teammates. I'm excited to see him distribute the ball a lot, but I'm not sure if we're there yet on depending on him to be 100% the guy that's just going to pop that ball in the back of the net to be the game winner.
You know, he got the yellow card, right, when he came in?
He sure did, yeah. He did one of those, what they call a striker's tackle, where somebody, he just found himself in a bad position, and they come in, and he earned that yellow card. It was a good foul.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he is just unlucky, just like how you said it. But all in all, I think the more minutes he gets throughout the season, the more he'll get his footing in. You can definitely see nerves were out there. Tensions were high. Nobody wants to allow the first goal to go in, especially not in the final 10 minutes. But a lot of these guys went in, or the last 20 minutes of the game, especially. Hoping we can score in the first half of the next game.
Yeah, I think if we get a goal in early, that opens them up. They can't sit in the box then, right? They have to come out after us.
Mm-hmm. And they have to come out.
They were trying to come out after us. We were shutting them down. Back to Juan Torres' foul. It probably, if he had a little more confidence in his back line, he might not have done that, but that's just, he's new to his teammates. But one of the other backs I want to talk about, because I think would be my man of the match backup or first runner up, is Mark Siebers. He was going at it out there. He was having a good time. He was in the back, and then all of a sudden you see him up in the front and part of the attack sometime. He come in at like 71 passes, passing accuracy 87%. That's not bad for a back, is it?
Definitely not for a back.
Yes, right, he come in last year towards the end of the year. I think he's a right back, I believe. Yeah, but he come in. I think he did a great job last night helping to progress the ball forward and be in the right place at the right time.
But and then on the other side of the note too, you had him on the right side, and then on the left hand side, you had Josh Drack, who had a completely different story where he did struggle at times, but he had a very aggressive attack coming against him. And I think he had to hold down the fort very well, especially when Leland went out as well, because that was who was next to him. So definitely had to restructure back there, and I think they'll bounce back for next game.
Yeah, he did. He had Drack had 3 clearances. It looked like a good interception. His passing was up in the upper 70 percentile. 2 duels won, which is a pretty good stat there. Now, let's talk. I want to talk quickly about man of the match. I'm just going to call it out. I think everyone will agree, and that's Aaron Malloy. He was just in the center, and he was distributing the ball out well and giving a calmness on the ball and just did a fantastic job. It's great to see somebody like that in our midfield.
Definitely, especially going forward too. But that was one thing that I noticed with North Carolina's formation is that when they play that 3-4-3, they're 4 in the middle, they're playing 2 CDMs, right? So they're playing 2 guys further back, which is allowing Malloy to have those tight turns distributed very quickly off of his feet and switch the field of play, which is great to see him, but he's under pressured at times. So a lot of the times he had the room to free and everything. So going forward, I want to see him under a little bit more pressure and see him get out of those tight turns. He did do good getting out of the corners a few times in the second half. There were times where we were stuck in the corners and he came in and got us right out. So I'm looking for more of the triangle passes and for those quick turns and for us to really get into the final third.
Patrick, you have any final thoughts?
I'm just curious because obviously Juan Torres came out as a sub. I'm just curious where he's going to fit in, because I think we all agree we see him as a starter, someone who can play the great ball through to someone who has the vision on the field. But with everyone out there, does he take Jake's spot? Does he take Emilio's spot? I want to see more of this guy. I don't want to see him for 45 minutes. I want to see him for 90 minutes. I want to see what he can create in a full match. But I don't see who's going to be, not necessarily giving up their spot, but who does he be out to squeeze into this starting squad that we have that is so strong?
I know that's a horrible predicament, isn't it?
One thing that's also shocking, too, is that we switched both of our wingers, our guys out wide, and both guys who started out wide are all strikers. Yet we kept Nick Markanic up top and left him unsubbed. Is there a reason for that?
It could be mind games. I don't know. Fan, we're not going to complain that we have 3 strikers on the field trying to bang some goals in the net, right? As a former keeper, that's what you want to see. I want to see the coach telling us, let's go for it. But yeah, there's so much creativity. I don't know how, even if this formation is going to change or we do a false 9 and then we end up just running people because the movement is way much easier for our midfielders to control and people can just get off the ball. Not the old days where it's just bang the ball up and hopefully the ball is just smashed in the back of the net because we have the fastest guy and we paid him a lot. Like I really feel like this is a team that's trying to figure each other out, but has the ability to play the balls that none of us are seeing until it happens. And we're just excited when it does of saying, oh my God, like these are the guys, these are the midfielders we've always wanted in this team to actually have a midfield and not just go defense to forward.
And they're still a relatively young team, not just in age, but also in practicing, playing with each other. I think we have great things to look forward to the rest of the season.
All right, next match. Where is it at? Where are we watching? Is it broadcasted? People got to know.
So next match is the Oakland Roots. It's our time, 10 o'clock.
Late night.
So Saturday night, last night, nice little pub that I enjoyed to go have a pint or 6 at. Edmonds Oast Brewing Company apparently put it on the screen above the bar so everybody could watch, and hopefully we can get more of that in there. And I know when next time it's a away match, I'll be going to Edmonds Oast Brewing Company and hopefully put on the match there and we can watch it.
That's the spot. They're amazing. They always have beer specials going on, game night specials, whatever you want to do. Food's amazing. Also spot too, if you have kids and you just want your kids to run around for a little bit, get a little energy out. But there's not many spots in Charleston that will play the Battery. And this is one. So support them a little bit. And hopefully we keep this going. Get all the TVs on. Get those gold jerseys in there.
Black and yellow. So that match is on the 16th of March, which I do believe is Saturday.
It's going to be on ESPN.
So plus. ESPN Plus. So since we're talking about broadcasters, I'm going to rail a little bit against the Galazzo. I don't know who paid them, but you wouldn't even know by their commentary throughout the match, other than a couple times, that the Charleston Battery was even out there. The couple times they talked about was one of the announcers was going to Ireland on the very first trip. And so the discussion was about how he texted Aaron Malloy to get some tips of where to go. Didn't talk about his ability to play, talked about his travel plans. And it was like that whole match, except for at the end, there was two little comments where obviously they were annoyed by a little band that we all know and love. And what's that called, Ryan?
Bar of Charleston.
They were going at it the whole match. You could hear it. You hear that rhythmic beat we're used to. And I don't know if they put the microphone or put the band right next to the microphones or what. At the end of the match, one of the comments here says, "That rhythm is in my head now. I don't think I'll get it out for a day or two," which I thought was fantastic. If nothing else, walked away him knowing that when they come to Charleston, they're going to have to face that the whole match. And that was just a small contingent of what they'll see when they come in. Ryan, you know a little bit about that, being in that supporter section like we always like to be, right?
Oh, I do. And I'm very excited. We have different broadcasting rights this year with the whole league. So we'll have a few games on ESPN Plus like next week. We'll have a few games like on Golazo like we did last night. But then we'll have a few games on the actual main media for CBS. And the first game is going to be at home against Louisville on April 9th. So we are definitely going to have the band, the drums, everything going as loud as we can for those games. I'm stoked.
Yeah, one last dig at one of the announcers. I can't even pronounce how he pronounced our beloved Emilio Icaza's name, but obviously they didn't do any work beforehand to try to figure out how to pronounce his name. Nothing, because it would come out Chakia. I don't even know what it was. It was just embarrassing. I wasn't embarrassed for him. He should have done his work. That's what he gets paid to do.
Shouldn't. Sounds like Taylor Twellman out there talking about people.
It sure did. When North Carolina comes to the Battery, they're going to see what it looks like to be facing the supporter section. They had it all. I don't know. Maybe they're just new to it, but their supporter section was a couple people standing against the rail. A majority of the fans were up in the regular grandstand. But when you come to Patriots Point, you're facing a wall on both ends now. Standing terraces where we just hack it out almost every match.
Brad, you can touch on it a little more. It looked like a middle school soccer team fan supporter. That's what they had.
Sure.
I can see the numbers on the seats more than I saw the fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, okay. I won't take any more digs at North Carolina. We'll welcome them when they come down to Charleston and they can walk back to USL.
I want to welcome them with
the yellow wall.
The yellow wall.
I'm not going to ask you any more about it because we're going to talk about that concept as we go along from podcast to podcast. Hey, guys, it was great talking to y'all. Try to get this out this week and go from here. And anybody that might be listening and goes back and listen, remember, this is our first podcast. We've got these raggedy group of guys together because we love to talk soccer. We love to talk football. And we all three love the Battery. And that's it.
All right. Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
Thanks y'all.
We love you.